Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dan Gaynor is with us right now. He's with the Business and Media Institute. In fact, he's the vice president of the Business and Media Institute. You're not going to try this global warming denier stuff, are you?
There are scientists on both sides. There are hundreds of scientists on the other side.
There are not scientists on both sides, Dan. You've got scientists who have no agenda or scientists who are looking at real science on the science saying, look, there is something really going on here, and then you've got a bunch of sellouts and shills and liars for the oil industry on the other side. If you take 1998 out of the equation and you look at from 1997 till now, every single year has got warmer. You go all the way back to the 1950s, every single year has gotten warmer. You guys take that one spiked year of 1998, you say, hey, it's gotten cooler every year since 1998. No, it hasn't. That's a lie.
The Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to Tom Hartman.
866-303-2270, our telephone number. John in Santa Fe, you voted on KTRC. You voted for George Bush once.
Yes. Actually, I was embarrassed because I voted twice for George Bush.
Okay.
I'd retired from work in 2006, and shortly after that, I started listening to your Radio America. And I realized that I guess I was sleeping. I was so busy in my work and stuff, I wasn't really looking at the issues. And the more I got educated, the more I realized, I've been asleep at the switch. So I changed to Democrat and voted for Obama in early voting to make sure I got that to count.
Good on you, John. I'm curious, when you voted for Bush, were you the classic low-information voter, somebody who's just so busy they're not paying attention? Or was there some particular policy or point of his that resonated with you?
It was just ignorance, I think. I was so busy with work, and I came from a Republican family, and I always kind of like trusted and thought, well, that's the way I'll go, because it was through ignorance, I guess. And boy, when I finally retired and got the time, I thought, what have I been doing? And now I'm an advocate on the other side now.
Good on you, John. Just inertia. Thanks a lot for the call. I love hearing these stories. Jeff in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, listening on WINS. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, hey, thanks for letting me on. I called before, and you're very gracious, with dialogue and everything. I did vote for Bush twice. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a disgruntled fiscal conservative, but unfortunately for you, I'm not voting for Obama because I don't believe entitlement programs ever die.
I agree with you. They don't die because the people want them.
And people that go against them are demonized. For example, like Bush even tried to make the warning. Just remember, he may try to make the warning about Social Security going belly up. And the seniors were scared out of their minds by the Democrats. But remember, who taxed Social Security benefits? It was Bill Clinton.
You're talking about the Republican Congress that passed legislation taxing Social Security benefits. Yes, that was during the Reagan administration.
I know.
When the Republicans controlled the majority of Congress. Tax bills have to originate in the House of Representatives. They don't originate with the president. And it was Reagan who doubled the Social Security tax, Jeff, if you want to get into that. But the point is that entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare are around because people want them. The idea of a fundamental social safety net, just a basic, you're not going to fall through this into abject poverty, living on the street with a shopping cart and a sleeping bag. That's something that most Americans consider to be an American value.
I understand, and I understand how you think that FDR came in as a hero and he got us out of the Great Depression, but it really started to get bad when he was elected, and I seriously believe that his policies kept us in the Great Depression. It was actually World War II that got us out.
Suggest that you go back and thank you for your point. I mean, this is an old Republican talking point. It goes back to the days when my dad was a kid. That what got us out of World War II got us out of the Great Depression was World War II. It simply ain't true. The bottom of the Great Depression was 1933, 1934. It was the first year that Roosevelt was president. They just dumped this thing in his lap, and he fixed it. And by the time we got into World War II, we were well out of the Great Depression. We were moving in a very, very positive direction. And I would submit to you, and just common sense would indicate, that World War II slowed down our emergence from the Great Depression.
This is Tom Hartman.
He's smart, and he's kick-ass, and he's funny.
Right, he's personable.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Dick Patton is with us. He's the president of the American Family Business Institute. Their website is nodeathtax.org. Dick, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, thanks for inviting me on.
So you are here to defend the Paris Hilton tax, or to oppose the Paris Hilton tax, rather. I don't get it. Here we have, you know, Adam Smith, the founder of economics, at least in the United States. So all the founders pointed to him as Wealth of Nations was published in 1776. He said, and I quote, quoting from Adam Smith, "The transmission of enormous wealth to young men does not do them any real service and is of great and genuine detriment to the community at large." He further said, quote, "There is no point more difficult to account for than the right we conceive men to have to dispose of their goods after death." End of quote. Adam Smith. Thomas Jefferson, "All hereditary privileges should be abolished since the earth belongs in usufruct to the living." Why defend the Paris Hilton tax, Dick?
You know, if you want to pull some quotes from the wise old men who are the founders of Western civilization, how about John Locke, who said, "If a man can work hard, save, gather, and invest, he should be able to give or bequeath whatever he's gathered to whomever he wants."
I agree with you that we should raise the limit on the Paris Hilton tax, probably to at least $20 million, maybe to $40 million. But somebody who is passing along, I know that the main funders of you, the largest funders of the anti-Paris Hilton tax movement, are the Walton family. In secret, until it was outed, put hundreds of millions of dollars into this thing over a number of years, into redefining this and promoting it and paying your paycheck and others. And we're talking about people passing along billions of dollars. Please tell me how it does any good to any young person to be given millions or hundreds of millions or billions of dollars upon birth.
Tom, let me start out with your term, the Paris Hilton tax, because Paris Hilton actually embodies one of the dynamics that's taking place in the death tax, and that is this, that the truly multi-billionaire, well-established estates out there have, number one, armies of lawyers, and they have tools like tax-protected foundations that protect them from paying the death tax.
Those foundations do not protect their taxes from passing them on to their children. Yeah. The amount of money that they're going to pass on to their children is not protected by foundations, and you know that, Dick. By opposing the Paris Hilton tax, Dick, what you are doing is diminishing the possibility of social mobility in the United States.
You know, Tom, you couldn't be more wrong. First of all, you know, the Warren Buffetts and the Bill Gates of this world have methods for protecting their capital beyond the death tax. According to Clinton economic advisor Alicia Munell, the estate tax costs more to enforce than it actually brings into the government.
It brings in over a trillion dollars a decade. Why don't we raise the Paris Hilton tax to $40 million? Paris Hilton doesn't have to pay a penny of income on the first $40 million that she receives when her parents die. After that, she has to pay 50%. This is a transfer of wealth, after all. It's an unrealized capital gain. If we raise the Paris Hilton tax to $40 million, it would literally be a couple thousand families a year. To have the IRS enforce the Paris Hilton tax against a couple thousand families a year is going to cost more than $250 billion over a decade. Is that what you're saying?
It's going to be probably about that, except for this.
No, come on. I mean, how much does a government bureaucrat cost? $80,000-$90,000 a year with pensions and benefits and everything?
Tom, let's actually put this in perspective, because you're talking about...
I think I just did.
The Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman.
If you actually believe in any of the Christian tenets, they say the poor you will always have with you and the wealthy you will always have with you.
That's no rationalization.
If you
believe in that, then you need also to go to Matthew 25, where Jesus says, you know, they said to him, how are you going to get into heaven? And he said, you know, the only way that you're going to get into heaven is by feeding the poor, is by healing the sick, is by, you know, giving water to those who are thirsty, by visiting those who are in prison. And actually, he said, by doing it to me. And they said, and they were totally freaked out because none of them had ever seen him hungry or in prison. And they said, you know, how are we going to get into heaven? And he said, as you do it to the least of my brothers, you've done it unto me. I mean, if you're going to invoke Christianity, at least invoke the actual, you know, themes of Christianity. And by the way, it wasn't new. I mean, those are the tenets that were at the core of Judaism for 1,000 years prior to that.
Witty and sophisticated. charming.
This is Tom Hartman.
You have recently wrote this piece called The Female Fact. You wrote this. In it, you say, and I'm quoting, American women are healthier, wealthier, healthier, and better educated than at any time in our history. Yet Professor McKinnon, you're referencing a Wall Street Journal piece that was essentially endorsing Barack Obama, casts women as under siege in America and victims of a system stacked against them. She sees a bigger and more activist government as the cure of women's ills. Unfortunately, big government policies tend to backfire on women, end quote. Is that accurate, that quote?
Yeah, I was really shocked, I think, by the way, Professor McKinnon's piece, because it did just paint such a bleak picture of the situation that American women face. You know, women are doing really well in terms of education, in terms of succeeding in the workplace. We've got a lot to be happy about, and a lot of that is due to the free market economy, which gives women so much opportunity.
Carrie, I'm a little older than you, but I would assert that this is the result of big government. I'm old enough to remember 1971 or 72, I forget which year it was. I was the manager of a health food store that was part of a national chain, and the general manager had advised me, A, that he never hired women as managers because they didn't have authority, and B, when I was hiring, I remember looking in the newspaper, I had to place a help wanted ad, and I had to decide whether I wanted to put help wanted men or help wanted women. And his advice to me, and this is a guy who later became one of the senior vice presidents of this national company, his advice to me was hire women, they'll work for less. And that is now illegal as a result of big government. So I would submit to you that what you are proclaiming, which is true, American women wealthier, healthier, and better educated than any time in our history, is the direct result of liberals in government.
Well, you know, I think that certainly there's been advances and government played a role in outlawing discrimination. But you also have to recognize the cost that that those programs and even these regulations create.
What is the cost of requiring that if you're going to hire somebody for a job that you've budgeted $50,000 a year for, that if you hire a man, you can't pay him $52,000 versus hiring a woman and paying her $45,000?
No, you know, I think I'm all for it. Discrimination laws make a lot of sense, and that's a rational.
But that's big government.
It should be businesses who decide how much their employees should be paid.
I'm a little confused by this. You're suggesting that because we do have right now in the United States the government telling employers how much they must pay. It's called the minimum wage law. Are you suggesting that there should be no minimum wage law?
Well, I actually, you know, I think that the minimum wage has created a whole lot of costs, and that's by pricing some people, or people who are poorly educated and poorly skilled, out of the marketplace.
But are you suggesting that if somebody has the misfortune of being born with an IQ of 95, but they have a lot of integrity, they're a decent person, and they're willing to work hard for 40 hours, that that person should never be able to make enough money to actually put their family through, put their kids through school, own a home, pay for health insurance?
There's two sides to that coin. We're talking about opportunity versus mandating how much somebody should be worth. But
the minimum wage in Denmark is $14.70 an hour, and they have an unemployment rate of around 2%.
High unemployment here in Europe. There's a lot of unemployment in Europe.
First of all, I believe that the Danish unemployment rate is below ours. And secondly, if you're unemployed in Denmark, you get pretty good unemployment benefits that last for multiple years. I mean, there's basically a social safety net that people don't fall through. And the reality is that most people would rather be employed than unemployed. You know, just sitting around all day gets pretty boring pretty quickly.
Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's say that you're living in Canada and paying 50% income tax, and all of a sudden George Bush takes over Canada and cuts taxes down to 20%. And so you're still making $70,000 a year, but now instead of taking home $35,000 a year, you're taking home something like $50,000 a year, right? What's your employer going to do? They know that you'll do that job for $35,000 a year. Do you think that they're going to continue paying you $70? Look at the last 7 years. George Bush cuts taxes, and what happens? Pay goes down. Look at the 8 years that preceded that. Bill Clinton increased taxes, and what happened? Pay went up. The marketplace will always compensate for taxes. That's why in Sweden, with 50%, 55% tax rates, people are making enough money to live. And that's why in the United States, with 25% tax rates or 30%, 32% maximum, people are making enough to live. The bottom line is it doesn't matter.
Tom Hartman.
Michael in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael.
Morning, Tom.
Hey.
Good morning to the National Security Agency.
Hi to the FBI. Hey, greetings to the Secret Service. All of folks who are listening to your phone call.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.